Welcome to the Diplomats Podcast on Asian Geopolitics. I'm Ankit Panda from New York.
And I'm Zachary Keck from Washington.
On today's podcast, we'll be devoting most of our time to talking about the extension of the Iran talks between the P5 plus one group of powers and the Islamic Republic of Iran. Zach, do you want to tell us a bit about what happened here with the talks, why they needed to be extended? So just for our listeners, Iran and the P5 plus one signed an interim deal last November that was a major step towards resolving the dispute over Iran's nuclear program. But now the powers have been working towards a comprehensive deal, which they've been unable to attain at this time. So there was a four-month extension on the talks. And Zach can tell us a bit more about why exactly that was necessary.
Yeah, so basically the interim agreement was for 6 months. When it was signed in November, went into effect in January. But in the interim accord, it said like this – the sides can agree to a six-month extension. They decided instead to do a four-month extension because when the talks began for the original interim accord last November, Zarif and Kerry, John Kerry, said that they want to get a deal done in 1 year. So basically the extension sets the new deadline as 1 year since the interim agreement was actually signed. So that's why they said they've done 1 year or a 4 month extension instead of a 6 month extension. Mm-hmm. I think the reason probably more has to do with the U.S. election, the midterm elections. I think that that the U.S. is about to enter into election mode, and there's just no way they can really get a deal done during the elections are going on. By contrast, say like a Republican takeover of the House happens, there could be a lame duck period where some Democrats are leaving office and they might be willing, therefore, to remove some sanctions because they know they're not going to be running for re-election again.
Right.
This is kind of what happened with the New START Treaty after the 2010 midterm elections, where they basically got the New START Treaty with Russia ratified right during the lame duck session after the election, but before the new Congress took office. So the new extension, though, in terms of the reason why it was necessary is because they basically were too far apart. They haven't really said exactly what issues, but it seems like the main issues where there's still gaps is how many centrifuges Iran is going to be able to maintain at once under a comprehensive agreement. Supreme Leader Khamenei said that Iran needs excessive amount. I think it was like 19,000 centrifuges for its civilian nuclear program. And the U.S. and the P5 plus one are pushing more for like a couple thousand. Iran currently has around 10,000, I believe. And then the terms of the extension are basically the same as the agreement, the interim accord, except for that Iran's agreed to convert its remaining 20% stockpile, which had already been converted into oxide form. They're now converting that into fuel form for the Tehran research reactor. And once it's in fuel form, Iran doesn't have the capability, basically the equipment, to turn it back into.
Right.
Turn it back into the material necessary to enrich it towards weapons grade material. It also, once it feeds it into the reactor, then that fuel would be useless no matter what equipment it has.
Right. So I mean, obviously, it seems like there is a wide rift still between the United States and Iran here. Do you think that it's realistic that they'll be able to work out these differences in another 4 months? I mean, from what I hear, Kerry thinks it's going to be extremely difficult at this point. But that might just be signaling towards the Iranian regime to essentially come down a bit on the number of centrifuges it wants to keep.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of posturing. I mean, that's like Supreme Leader Khamenei. He made that statement like the week before this interim agreement or the extension was signed, and where he said he spoke in very technical terms for the first time, and it's like specific how many centrifuges they wanted. So that kind of, I think, really hurts the talks or the chances of agreement being signed. But there can be some creativity, like for the first 10-20 years Iran doesn't have 19,000 centrifuges, but then later after in the future it can have that much, and there's some wiggle room still. But it's going to be tough to get an agreement, especially, and the U.S. can't guarantee it can get sanctions removed, at least indefinitely. The way it would do it is basically by executive order would suspend the sanctions
right
under the National Security Clause, but indefinitely. But in terms of actually getting them removed for good, I mean, that's going to be – I mean, the Obama administration can't promise that they can get Congress to do that. So that makes it hard too.
Yeah. I mean, so what do you think is the logic behind Khamenei's statement? Do you think he was fed that by the nuclear negotiation team, or do you think that's something that he's independently coming up with?
I don't think he independently came up with it, but I don't think the negotiation – I think he kind of did that despite the nuclear negotiating team. I think it was basically, I mean, I think, you know, the U.S. is setting terms through the public in terms of, like, it was saying it would only accept a few thousand centrifuges at most. And so I think he, you know, was kind of negotiating through the the media by setting those terms. But so, I mean, it is posturing, but it does make a deal harder because I don't think then, like, there's going to be some sort of idea that Iran will someday have 19,000 centrifuges or however much he said. Otherwise, like, he loses face. So I think it was probably backed by more of the hardliner elements in the Iranian regime, but it's also just kind of them trying to posture for an agreement. What about your views on that?
No, I mean, I agree with that view. I mean, it would really be unlikely that the negotiating team is, you know, planning that with Khomeini. I mean, I think the Iranian negotiation team is actually, I mean, they've been through a lot. Like, they're conceding quite a bit here. I mean, I think you noted that when, you know, we talked about the joint plan of action in our coverage in The Diplomat. I mean, just, like, what the Iranian regime had to give up to keep the talks going, to make the interim deal possible in the first place were, you know, it was huge. And especially at this point, it just seems like, you know, I think that maybe the P5 and the one need the P5 plus one need to essentially approach the situation with a little bit more realism.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think that, yeah, I think the Zarif and Rouhani have based too much of their legitimacy at this point on the talks to not want them to succeed and be able to go very far to make them succeed. Same kind of with the Obama administration. So if anything, it's these hawks in domestically in both in the U.S. and Iran that are going to screw things up. But I think both the regimes or both the administrations want the deal to succeed. They're just kind of trying to find the best terms possible so they can both sell to the domestic audiences.
Absolutely. The domestic audiences are a huge problem. I mean, you actually had a really interesting piece about this, about you know, the reason Iran loves the U.S. hawks that are constantly talking about canceling the talks and returning back to the pre-talk status quo with Iran. I mean, do you want to tell listeners a bit about, you know, your argument there?
Yeah, well, I was noting some of the proposals coming from U.S. hawks on Capitol Hill. One of the deals that are floating around, one of the plans would be to impose for Congress to pass some agreement or resolution that the U.S. couldn't remove the sanctions unless the administration could verify that Iran's nuclear program was peaceful, that it wasn't engaging in terrorism, and that it wasn't Iran's central bank wasn't engaging in money laundering. And I was just noting kind of like those kind of proposals. If the U.S. blew up the talks because of money laundering, I mean, that would just be a huge win for Iran, particularly its hardliners, because basically, I mean, it would turn international opinion against the U.S., and it's going to be very difficult to continue to impose these sanctions on Iran if the entire world's against it. I mean, countries like India, Japan, South Korea, China, Russia, South Africa, Turkey, they're already kind of upset about these sanctions because they're losing out on lucrative economic opportunities. The reason why they agreed to them is because it's after the Obama administration came in, it seemed like Iran was the one that was causing the one opposed to a nuclear agreement, which made them worried about Iran's nuclear program. So now with Rouhani trying to be very reasonable, the Rouhani administration, if these U.S. hawks blew up the Iran talks, I just think that U.S. would lose out. The sanctions would unravel slowly, if not quickly. And I think it's what Iran would love this.
Yeah, no, absolutely, you're right. I mean, you know, you just brought up the issue of India and China and other countries in Asia. I mean, just recently there were numbers released that show that, you know, China has drastically upped its import of Iranian oil since the interim deal was signed. But on the contrary, you know, India appears to be actually reducing its reliance on Iran. And I wonder if that's because the Indians think that Iran's political situation in the future is, again, uncertain, you know, vis-a-vis the international community if they see sanctions still persisting. India's kind of started to hedge its import bets with, like, South American oil instead of Iran, which is really weird because, you know, I would think that India would be increasing its oil reliance on India just like China's doing, but apparently not.
Yeah, you're not really sure why India is doing that, or do you know why China's increasing it? I mean, you wrote the piece on this.
I think it's just you know, the two countries are making two different bets. I think China thinks that Iran's geopolitical position is going to improve significantly, and maybe India isn't as optimistic. Because it wasn't just a percentage decrease in India, because that could still imply that India is actually importing more barrels per day from Iran, but also importing more generally from elsewhere. It's actually a decrease in the number of barrels per day that India is actually importing from Iran. But again, like, those numbers could be a little bit misleading, because the numbers that like, the China data was significantly more up to date, and the India data was based around, I think, March, which wasn't, I mean, I think that was just 2 months into the implementation of the interim deal. So maybe things have changed since then, which is something to keep in mind. But I would be very surprised if India decreases its reliance on Iranian oil in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I could see an increase probably, if anything. I mean, especially if the deals can work out. I know India has been really concerned about Iran's geopolitical position. I think maybe China, maybe it's possible that China feels less less vulnerable to the sanctions because it's such a big, I mean, it's like one of the biggest U.S. trade partners and stuff. So maybe it feels that the U.S. isn't going to go too far in sanctioning its companies, you know, or just is more connected to the international or has like more banks that aren't connected to the international financial system that it can use as a conduit, or whatever.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about the P5+1. I mean, something I'm curious about is, you know, where do so China and Russia are obviously, you know, slightly. I mean, they're not on the same exact page as the EU3 and the United States here. And you know, Russia has obviously been facing international isolation since its actions in Ukraine. It's been kicked out of the G8 and all that. So how does that actually affect Russia's position within the P5+1?
Well, Russia and China were the only ones that didn't send their foreign ministers to these talks. The talks about the extension. So that and then also the French foreign minister told Parliament that Russia had made P5+1 unity throughout these whole talks, and now Russia was taking a different line from the rest of the P5+1. So, I mean, I think this is partly has to do with these, like you said, these other crises, the Ukraine crisis, Syria crisis, but it also has to do with the fact that Russia might be getting nervous. I mean, it could signal that Russia's getting nervous about an Iran-U.S. reapproachment, because that does not serve Russia's interests at all.
Right.
It like to exploit these nuclear talks as a way to increase Iran's reliance on Russia, but it ultimately does not want a U.S.-Iran reapproachment, because that's gonna undermine Russian interests in the Middle East, and also, I mean, Iran borders Russia, or not border, it's very close to Russia.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that the current events in Iraq have any bearing on the current position between the U.S. and Iran? I mean, I don't see very much of that influencing the nuclear talks, but obviously, in broader terms, you know, both Iran and the United States are thinking very closely about Iraq right now.
Yeah, Iran's been kind of unclear on what. I mean, first of all, Supreme Leader Khamenei has been blaming the U.S. for the ISIS, the Islamic. Now, I guess just the Islamic State. He's arguing that the U.S. and Israel and its allies have created the Islamic State to try to sow disunity between the Shiites and the Sunnis in Iraq. But I mean, I think that the negotiating team, the actual Rouhani administration, has kind of been saying, like, we want to cooperate more with you in Iraq, but we can't do so unless we get these nuclear deal done. So, I mean, personally, the ISIS is a way bigger threat to Iran than it is to the U.S., so I don't think Iran's in any position to say that to the U.S. I think, if anything, the U.S. should be like, if you make concessions on the nuclear program, we'll help you with your ISIS problem. So, and what is your view on that?
No, I completely agree with that. I mean, we talked about this a bit on our podcast about the Islamic State in Iraq and everything. You're absolutely right on that count.
Yeah, I've been kind of surprised. I mean, I get the Khamenei trying to blame ISIS as a creation of the U.S. or whatever. I get that, because he's trying to basically, I mean, Iran's very worried about the sectarian tensions in the region, so he's trying to find ways to, like, you know, overcome those sectarian tensions, and blaming the U.S. and Israel kind of is a way for them to come together, the Sunnis in Iran to come together against ISIS, I guess. I mean, it's a very desperate move. It's not going to work, but it's like, I see what he's trying to do there, but I don't really get the whole, you know, Iran being like, well, if you guys make concessions on the nuclear program, we'll help with your ISIS problem, when it's way more Iran's ISIS problem.
Yeah, no, they don't have the leverage in the negotiations to really make that point convincingly, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. Iran actually backed away from supporting Malaki for a third term this week, and that's kind of been where the U.S. has been going to. So in terms of, like, Iran-U.S. cooperation in Iraq, I think it's very real. I mean, I think they keep being, like, in agreement on everything, it seems like, or most things. But I just don't see it really impacting the nuclear. It might be a little more of a motivation for the nuclear talks to succeed, but I don't really see it being hugely impactful.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it goes back to the issue of domestic audiences. I think both, you know, Khamenei and the Obama administration have to worry about that in their mutual bilateral interactions.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it just shows again, like, how if a nuclear deal did lead to a more detente between Iran and the U.S., like, how that would be beneficial, I think, for both countries, because they just have so many issues that they could cooperate on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we'll be keeping a close eye on the progress towards a comprehensive deal over at The Diplomat. But thanks a lot for joining me, Zach, and we'll be back next week with more.
Thank you.